Biniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are enjoying us, please head over to Apple Podcasts, give us all the stars. This helps other people find us. Today, I have the honor and the pleasure to be joined by Civic Chief Culture Officer Linda Ong. She is a returning guest to the pod. And a new appearance by Scott Safon. He is CMO of UpTV. Hi, guys. Linda, thanks for coming back. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. So we're going to have a fascinating conversation on brand citizenship, which is a panel. There's going to be a panel on this also at the conference this next month in New York. So let's kick it off with Linda. Why don't you just tell us what brand citizenship is?
Sure. Well, brand citizenship is really what I think is the confluence of being a purpose-driven company and a profit-driven company. So it's really about looking at an idea of social good or giving back to citizens as part of your brand, not an outreach initiative or something that you do as corporate social responsibility, but really making it part and parcel of everything that you do. Sometimes it might be more foreground, sometimes it might be background, but really understanding that, especially in the cultural environment we are in today, that millennials and younger audiences especially really want to invest their time and money and efforts into brands that have meaning to them.
I admit there are a lot of the writing that's done about this issue. It sometimes calls it strategic philanthropy, sometimes it calls it, you know, purpose-driven efforts that are core to the company's business, but it is something that has been always a part of a lot of businesses' outreaches, but as Linda said, it's sometimes just kind of sidelined as corporate responsibility or community, and we're actually seeing that the companies and brands are getting much more excited about bringing it right into the center of their business and making it a core part of the purpose of the enterprise.
The way I see this also is that the brand citizenship is sort of woven into their brand and also into their culture. So I'll start again with Linda. Can you give me an example of a brand that's really woven the citizenship into their very nature?
Yeah. 100%. I am such a CVS fan. I'm a customer. I'm a brand fan. And they got me because CVS, which, you know, was a sort of a run-of-the-mill drugstore chain, announced a couple of years ago that they were no longer going to sell cigarettes because they realized that they were in the business of providing better health to people and not just about convenient things you could pick up at a drugstore. And you can see that if you follow what they do, and especially their social media, they're very active in executing on that kind of brand citizenship, where everything that they comment on and everything that they do from a business perspective is about helping people be healthier. And so they've weighed in on issues from the opioid crisis, which obviously, you know, is something that affects their business in a positive way, but they understand that it's not good for their customers, it's not good for the country, and in order to be a good brand citizen, they need to really take a stand on that. They really have everything that they do, and when you're in their stores, you can really understand that they are very customer-centric about people's health, and they believe that's good for the country. They also have now invested in healthcare. So, you know, everything that they do is really driven by this idea of how do we contribute as a citizen of this country.
Okay, so that's an interesting one, and actually one I didn't know anything about. Scott, do you have an example of one?
Well, I'll use another brand. I'll use another brand that I really am a big customer of, and I watch them closely. Airbnb. I think Airbnb. It was sort of founded with this idea, even that, you know, people would share their homes as a enterprise, but also, you know, as a traveler, you enter the Airbnb world and get a chance to kind of live someplace else rather than just, you know, having a place to stay. And I think that it's so funny that when you're inside that world of Airbnb, that feeling about opening, you know, not just your home to somebody, but your whole community to somebody and your whole way of life to somebody else permeates like everything that they tell you, everything that they say when you start to, you know, use their product. Now, that idea where the founding mission was very purpose-driven and very clear that it was aiming for that, manifested itself really nicely last year with all of the immigration, you know, controversies, mm-hmm. immigration law controversies. And then they went out very publicly and very spur of the moment, kind of. It was almost a, you know, an idea that they came up with on the fly. It was written about quite a bit that the leadership of the brand got together with their agency and they just came out with this spot that kind of showed a variety of spaces, of faces that were very, you know, inclusive of all walks of life. And they basically said, you know, we are all together in this. We are all living together. And, you know, they made that statement. And I thought that was an interesting example of brand citizenship, because only a brand that was deeply engaged in its purpose and in that frame of mind could you know, respond to a news, you know, a news development with that clarity and with that openness and that heart, but because they just live it and they know it and they understand it. So they you know, I felt as an Airbnb customer a lot of gratitude to them for, you know, making that statement, being so relevant and being so direct.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I actually wanted to add on top of that, another great example of that is Patagonia, when the president announced a rollback on national parks. They ran an ad the next day that said the president stole your land. They took a very political, partisan stance, which is not always necessary to be a brand citizen, but they really felt that this was at the very heart of who they were. They needed to really protect the outdoor spaces for their customers and for the purpose of their brand. So, you know, I think that one thing that people sometimes get confused about is they can be really tentative sometimes about citizenship because they feel that it necessitates taking a partisan stand, which it can, but in the case of Patagonia. But, you know, in the case of CBS, for example, which just acquired Aetna, it's really about how do we make our customers' lives healthier in as many ways possible. And you even see, you know, Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway getting together with JP Morgan to create a new health insurance, which is a different way of reacting to voids in the institutions that are failing now. So there's a lot of ways that people can be citizens, and it's not just about taking a partisan stand.
The related thing, though, is that if you know yourself that well and you know your brand that well, these kind of innovative ideas that might be innovative partnerships or innovative new products that might speak to citizenship, you don't do a lot of hand-wringing about it, because if you have clarity about what you want to be in the world and the good you want to make happen in the world, and it's directly tied to your core business, it's a path to a long-term business development strategy and a long-term marketing strategy too.
So how do you get that clarity as a brand?
It's the most important question. It's the question we're going to talk about at our session, because it is rare to have a brand these days that going, no, I don't want to do any of this brand citizenship stuff. They all want to, and they all understand the value of it, because they all understand what their customers are saying and what their own employees are saying about the importance of it. The first step, I would say, or one of the initial steps, would be getting very, very, very in touch with the origin story of that brand. Like really understanding why was this thing created in the first place? Why was it successful in the first place? Usually that has the seeds of why that product or service or brand was needed in the first place, and who it spoke to and why it was valued and why it had success. If you go back to that and really try to get to the essence of that, I think you will start to figure out where you know what your role as a citizen should be.
Right, which
that is such a great point. I have to jump on that, because, you know, very often if I'm working on a relaunch of a brand, that's the first thing that we do is we go back and we look at when this brand was at its height. What was going on culturally? What did they plug into? And usually there is some kind of cultural need that they're responding to. And I think the thing I was going to jump in and say was that, you know, a lot of brands, I find when you sit down and you ask them, what does success look like? What is sort of the reason that you're here? A lot of people's first answer is sort of profit or be number one or very kind of self-serving. And so part of it is changing, you know, flipping the lens and saying, well, what is the good that you want to do in the world? What is the need? Is it, you know, to, again, make people's lives healthier, or is it to provide some kind of different perspective that's not being seen, or what is the need from a human level that you're serving, not just what is the need that you're serving your stockholders.
Where do you see this play out in TV and entertainment?
It's so funny. When I'm giving examples to people these days about where it's been successful, I sometimes like to point out to places in the past where it's been successful, where people have done brand citizenship in a very natural, organic way. And I will a lot of times use cable examples. I mean, Rock the Vote, Save the Music, Save Our History. Those were very great examples of brand citizenship because they were tied to the core business and they were tied to the promise made to consumers about what that genre of programming was. But it also had a strong sense of like a crusader's mentality. Like, this is something that has to happen. You and I, you know, you, the customer, and me, the brand, believe in this. And that's why we're all watching, you know, music videos, or that's why we're, you know, calling attention to new artists, because these people need support. I mean, this genre needs to be saved. And so that to me is always my favorite examples to use.
Yeah, I would say that one of the reasons that Scott and I wanted to do this session at Promax is because we want to challenge our colleagues and we want to challenge the industry to figure out how to do those kinds of things, not as a once a year or one department initiative, but really think about how can you transform a company by transforming its goals. Right, and that everything you do needs to sort of have an end game of contributing to society at its heart. And I think one of the first things that one of you mentioned the workplace earlier, and I think that one of the challenges right now, especially in this Me Too moment, is that workplaces need to adapt and evolve to a place where they're living those values. So one of the questions you sent, Paige, is what's an example of when that goes wrong? And I would say, unfortunately, one of the great champions of branding for many, many decades has just fallen, and that's Nike. Nike was, you know, I think pretty widely viewed in culture as one of the examples of a great brand and a great company and great values. That it turns out now that they have their own set of sexual harassment scandals. And so all of the messaging that they were putting out into the world about equality look very hollow. And so I actually think one of the things that companies need to do is really understand, you know, what's going on in culture in the outside world and how can they align with it internally? What are the things that are important to them? And where are they going to put their stake in the ground? And once they understand that, to your point, Scott, then it becomes natural because then you're just expressing what is going on at the inside of the company in everything that you do that goes externally.
Yeah, and the closer that it gets, the closer that you know, those efforts are to the product that you create or the relationship you have with a customer, that's better. That's a long-term thing. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people will point to, you know, companies, brands that have tried to align themselves with big cultural movements and just missed the mark because they didn't do it in a relevant way, or they looked like they were sort of borrowing the equity of the movement rather than being organically part of it. You know, like Pepsi and the Kendall Jenner ad. I mean,
yeah,
I know
right.
it's frequently cited, but it's you know, the most vivid example of it recently, where like, wait, that was completely wrong because they really had no place talking about that, and certainly not treating it, you know, the way they did. They just weren't speaking relevantly or, you know, meaningfully.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, the miss on Pepsi was that whoever it was who came up with the ad had clearly recognized that millennials were taking part in much more of an activist or taking on much more of an activist role in culture and attending rallies and speaking out. What they failed to realize is the reason they were doing that is because there was a deep sense of outrage and social injustice going on that had been fueled by a lot of events of the past couple of years, including a lot of people dying unnecessarily. And so that, I think, was where the, you know, the phrase tone deaf came into play. And I think it's really important when we're looking at things that are going on in culture that we understand why they're happening and how to address the why, not just the what. And so that's why I think, you know, one of the issues that's really interesting about workplace culture is there's a lot of studies now that say that millennials and younger, if they choose to work in a corporate environment, want to work at a company whose values and whose workplace who has strong values that they share and whose workplace reflects those values. And so what that really does, I think, especially in an industry like media that has a lot of traditions, really needs to beg reexamination of those traditions and reformulate to make things reflect their values better for their employees. And then you can, again, to the Nike point, then you can credibly communicate those values out to the real world. But it does really start inside. It can't be just a marketing message.
Right. And related to that, you know, a lot of the people who will be at our session are people who write. They're mm-hmm. supposed to find the words that convey this, whether it's to the consumer or inside the company. And authentic language that's direct and clear, but doesn't shy away from, you know, the elemental aspects of this thing you're trying to do in the world. That's all those things are important, and they're not easy. It's not as easy to say, hey, well, we're involved in breast cancer awareness. You know, that might be a wonderful thing to do, but if that is the way your brand is going to demonstrate citizenship, lots of thought about what should you be doing? How do you make a difference? How do your employees get to participate? How do your customers get to know about it? And what is the language that surrounds all of this so it doesn't look like we made a donation? And it looks instead right. like this is what we're here to, like, this is one of the reasons why this business exists. And you are you know, you get the benefit of being part of this bigger thing that only we can do.
I mean, I think it's such a tricky, it's such a fine line, because going back to the Pepsi ad, you know, it was an issue of cultural appropriation where I think they thought, hey, we'll just jump into this movement and make an ad about it and it will work. And it was, and those emotions, those feelings were not actually endemic to the brand. So it was clear that they didn't really understand what was going on. But I also think this idea, I mean, you see people falling into this pitfall of cultural appropriation all the time. I hear this conversation about all sorts of things. If you guys were advising Pepsi, or you can make a fictional scenario, but just for ease of explanation, how would you have advise Pepsi to approach that scenario so it did appear authentic? Or, you know, maybe said to them, this is maybe not your time and you've got some work to do before you jump into this area.
I'll go for that, because I've really thought about this. I think if I go back to the origins of Pepsi and of Pepsi marketing, the Pepsi generation, and that idea that, you know, you would share a Pepsi with your colleagues and talk things out or have a shared experience together. If I really wanted to go at that because my marketing research said your consumers are really, really thinking about this, is a really relevant thing to them, and you really should participate in this conversation, I would probably develop some approaches that were more about how my consumers were authentically talking about this. And it could be optimistic, but it had to be realistic. But what they did instead was do a problem solution ad where you saw a protest, and the protest was magically transformed into something positive by Kendall Jenner giving someone a Pepsi. And that was just naive.
Yeah,
and didn't reflect the conversation.
Yeah, and I was going to say a couple things. One is, I think just the choice of Kendall Jenner, who has no cred in any kind of movement right now other than her own, you know, that was the first sign, right? That she has no social cred in terms of any kind of activist movement or cause or, you know, other,
right.
again, other than Kardashian Inc. So so right away, she's a puppet, right? And then I think that
right.
there was no,
right.
if there was an activity behind the scenes in terms of Pepsi, you know, working with specific groups or trying to actually remedy some of the injustice that people were protesting against, it might have softened the blow even with Kendall Jenner, but it really just felt, to Scott's point, it felt very opportunistic. It was, hey, millennials
right.
love to protest. Cool, let's make a commercial. And
right.
there was no there. And so, you know, you contrast that with you know, other brands who are really kind of trying to affect change, whether it's, you know, Scott and I talk a lot about Verizon, and they have a program called Innovative Learning, mm-hmm. where they provide low-income kids with internet access and devices, and they're really trying to right a wrong there. Now, look, it's good for business, of course. They want to get their name out. They want to populate and proliferate their products and services, but what they actually are doing at the same time is making sure people that can't afford or don't have access to those services aren't being left behind. And so that's really, you know, they're elevating that now in a national campaign. They're putting a lot of effort behind it. Sure, they're trying to further their business, but as I said, it's about the, you know, about the conflation of purpose and profit. If you can do both of those, the double bottom line, then you're serving your stakeholders and your country.
And related to that is I believe them. I believe them when they
right.
do that.
And
that's
important.
Believe them.
And
it,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's the Danish commercial. It's TV2. It's called All That We Share. Mm-hmm. I think people have seen it. It won a lot of awards at Promax Europe this year. And it's, you know, it's all the different groups of people sort of raising their hand, you know, I'm bisexual or I'm transgender, or just sort of identifying that people that are standing next to you have a lot more going on with them, or you're connected to them in different ways than you knew. So I feel like that was always sort of the opposite of the Pepsi commercial, where you did believe them and it did feel authentic. And then, but I do think the challenge in this is that it requires the brand to be so deeply authentic that you mm-hmm. can't just feel like, for example, at Pepsi, it just felt like such a profit motive that I think people were actually sort of disgusted by it. But if you're, and then if you're Nike, I think people did buy into that. So then when you behave in a way that's disappointing, it's like doubly disappointing because you thought, yeah, I thought you are authentic in this, but actually you're not. So, but how, if, I mean, that's the other thing. I think the leadership also has to be that bought in. And like, I think the Patagonia leadership is that bought in. So it wasn't an issue for them. You know,
yeah, and but, you know, you made a really good point I wanted to jump in on, which is I think one of the most powerful media examples recently that I don't know if a lot of people picked up on, but it was really like my team was crazy about it, was Nat Geo, the magazine, did a whole issue on race. And one of the first things they did in the letter from the editor was basically call themselves out for decades of having covered different races and different geographies with a very jaundiced eye that was biased towards, mm-hmm. you know, a white, hetero, male, patriarchal, blah, 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 right? And so when you can call yourself out for your own errors, you create a lot more credibility and a lot more authenticity. And they did it because they felt it was the right thing to do. And, you know, Domino's has done this in a different category, you know, not for social good, but they recognized that there were things that they had been doing. Their pizza sucked. There was sugar in the crust and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But again, that's a brand citizenship mood because people don't want that stuff. They don't want crap in their bodies right now. And so, yes, it's a very shrewd profit-making move, but the ability, rather than just saying we've got a new crust or whatever, you know, their ability to say, you know what, we screwed up. We're going to do it differently. We recognize mea culpa. And that's what Nat Geo did. And I think it doesn't mean that everybody needs to apologize, but I think, you know, one of the things I like to say is if you want to create disruption in culture, you have to disrupt yourself first. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to do that if you're an established brand. And so that's one of the things I think about citizenship that, you know, again, Pepsi didn't do was they didn't question themselves. And I think that's the first thing back to the workplace, back to the values is like, what are we doing that we could do better? Because everybody can always be doing things better, especially in this current era. Because all of this is a reaction, as we know, to the election, right? This is a reaction to everything that's been going on for the past year, 2 years, 10 years since the economic collapse, is that things were not, something happened that led us astray and we're trying to right those wrongs now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And the related thing I'll say is that every brand will always want and look to its marketing and promotions team to say, how make us relevant. Right? We mm-hmm. want to be relevant. We want to be in the mix, in the consideration set, and respected and valued. And then you're left with looking for things that are relevant with your customer base. And it shouldn't be that hard. Like, if you're in touch with what is relevant to you as a brand, and you're staying in touch with your audience on your terms, and understanding right. how they are reacting and how they are using your product. And this is not a hard question. I think what happens is that you, once you've launched and you're having success and you're growing and you're establishing it, you forget to stay in touch with that. You know, I'm sure, you know, with a lot of beverage companies, we're doing well. Let's make most of our research about brand extension. And then the research might be needed to be more about cultural insights and where we're going and what matters to people and where do we fit in that conversation.
Yeah, another 100%. And I think to that end, you know, you look at a brand like the North Face. It's funny that Patagonia and the North Face, you know, are both these outdoor brands and they're being really progressive. But the North Face looked at their advertising and they said, how could we be doing better? And they realized, well, you know what? We don't feature enough women in our ads. So they made a commitment that 50% of their ads are going to contain women. That kind of, again, that sort of self-examination and saying, where could we do better? And to Scott's point, not saying we're doing great, let's keep doing more of it, but just really be, it is hard because it does require that willingness to admit there's areas that could improve. But I think that there's so many, every day we see more and more examples of brands willing to take a stand. And, you know, I think part of taking a stand is being willing to understand that some people may not like your stand and that you can hopefully gain more customers or followers by doing what you think is right for the brand than trying either not saying anything and being kind of bland or, you know, trying to soft pedal or be opportunist about it. So I think that it just requires a different way of thinking about the business where it's not just about getting consumers, but about creating relationships with people, about things that are important to them.
And the other dimension of brand citizenship is a self-awareness of your brand as a citizen. Like, mm-hmm. what does your brand living its, you know, authentic self, what would it do? That's why I'll give you one, I'll add yet another outdoor brand, REI. And yeah. REI, you know, deciding to close on Black Friday, that should right. be a day you should opt for outside things. That is a dramatic thing to do, but it absolutely says where they stand on this issue with Chick-fil-A being closed on Sundays. I mean, that these are dramatic gestures that I'm sure just looking at the dollars and just looking at the, you know, the balance sheets, people would have said, what, are you nuts? But they were like, no. You know, our values and what we stand for and what matters to us mean that we need to do this, and this is the stand we want to take. And those stances are rewarded. I mean, a strong stance on something is definitely rewarded by the culture today.
And look what happened with after Parkland and Dick's Sporting mm-hmm. Goods.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a shock because that was definitely
blow
to their. That's as big as CVS. Saying we're not going to carry cigarettes. That is a huge revenue line for them. And the fact that they were saying, you know what, we're not going to put profit above purpose because that doesn't feel right to us. And then you had, you know, Delta being criticized in Georgia for their stance against the NRA, and Delta said, fine, we'll move. So, you know,
yeah.
those are bold, and you're right, you're 100% right, Paige, comes from the top. So I think maybe for our industry, it's really about putting pressure on the leadership to pay attention to these things and make some calls. Because again, I think right now the way culture is and, you know, getting bandwidth and mind share from consumers when there's so much choice, that having meaning and having a purpose and being a good brand citizen is actually a differentiator right now.
And you have, because you don't want to sort of lurch from hot topic to hot topic, and you have to build it into your long-term plan, and that includes mm-hmm. understanding where the audience heads are at and where they're going and what the culture they live in is like and where it's headed. And I think one of the things that happens that sometimes might lead to a mistake like the Kendall Jenner ad is that it's very reactive. It's like, okay, this is important right now. We should say something about this. And that would never be the genesis of it. If you're living in it and understanding it, you would get the signs early on. You would be tracking something. You'd be monitoring the social conversations around it. You'd know. And if you know, if you're self-aware of where this brand fits in that world, it would just be natural to you to understand what you should do about it. And you might have to struggle with how you convey it, and the words you use and the images you use and the vehicle you use to get this across. but you would know it. You'd be able to do that huddle like the Airbnb leadership did and say, we have to respond to this right away and put an ad on the air.
See, I think that those companies, because the brand citizenship is so in the fabric of the brand, they don't even necessarily have to be monitoring the conversation. In a lot of ways, they're leading the conversation. They're saying, this happened and we're already positioned to react because we don't have to think about it or analyze it enormously because we're already so clear on where we're at. I mean, I don't think that's where anybody starts, but ideally, that's where you would end up because you've got that clarity.
The leadership is key, though.
Yeah, it's a passion. So, you know, Chobani is another example. They came out very early and loudly in the immigration debate because I believe their founder was born abroad. I can't remember where. But,
yeah, Turkey, I think.
Yeah, Turkey. And so, you know, some of it is very personal. But when you have strong leadership, the personal becomes universal and infuses in the brand. So I think, you know, in the case of Airbnb, they also, in the refugee crisis, offered housing to Syrian refugees in the U.S. So it wasn't just, you know, espousing an ideal, which is important, but it was also putting their money where, you know, their marketing was. And I think that, you know, that's the other thing is, you know, one of you mentioned breast cancer. And I think one of the things that's really interesting that we've seen culturally is, you know, the modern breast cancer movement is like, you know, over 25 years old, it's almost 30 years old. And, you know, people are aware that breast cancer is a problem. So it's not about just writing checks and being aware. Now it's like, how are we fixing it? How are we curing people? How are we saving lives? And I think that's the other thing about brand citizenship is it's not just PSAs and getting awareness out, it's actually taking action and giving your customers and your viewers the ability to act also. And we know that with millennials and Gen Zs, et cetera, they are very primed for this kind of action and they don't want, you know, it's not about writing a check and donating. They really want to create lasting change.
What I was thinking about was just going back to the election, which we kind of breezed over, but I just think it's an interesting time in the culture because it does feel so bifurcated where, you know, you've got some people, you've got these brands going in these certain directions, you've got CVS embracing healthcare, you've got, you know, these examples you guys have mentioned, Airbnb taking a strong stand on immigration, and then you've got, you know, the administration and half the country sort of going in this opposite direction. And it feels very polarized to me, although I'm starting to see it really more as all one thing because it's one thing reacting against another thing. But I think that it's interesting for brands to try to figure out where they live in that space, because no matter what position you take, you do risk alienating half your audience.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because some brands have been able to take positions that are very clear but not partisan. So, for example, you have a lot of, and this, you know, admittedly may not be, this may be a sort of a one-off as opposed to what we're talking about, but I think it is indicative of where sort of culture expects brands to go right now, which is, you know, disaster relief, for example, is a huge area of concern for many Americans. Because we've got hurricanes and wildfires and, you know, earthquakes, and I just heard Kilauea blew up again.
Yeah.
So, you know, brands, again, you know, we talk about since the economic collapse, there's a lot of institutional failure. Brands are one of the reasons that there's an appetite for brand citizenship is because brands are now filling in the voids that these institutions have failed to fill. And so you've got, you know, Budweiser bringing cans of water to victims of natural disasters. You've got entire brands who are mobilized for any natural disaster. They're going to be part of that in some way. You have Zappos paying for the funerals of people in Las Vegas from the shooting because Las Vegas is their hometown. That's what they decided they're going to stand for is their hometown. So it doesn't have to be partisan. And I think that the more that brands can understand that citizenship is not inherently a partisan POV, right? And it's essentially about how can we be part of this community, whether it's disaster relief or, you know, a tragic event like a shooting. You know, even CNN, which of course is in the news business and is seen as very partisan, one of the best things that they've done of note recently was their post-Parkland town hall, when they brought together both sides in the conversation. And it was one of the most effective hour or however long of television because you actually got to hear two different sides of the debate talk to each other. And I think that kind of commitment to not one side or the other, but what are the things that bring us together that are important, and how are the ways, how can we provide ways for people to have conversations with opposing views?
And I think the CNN example is an interesting one because that was also core to their business. I mean, that is what the CNN could have responded to Parkland in a lot of different ways, and they probably did. Right. And I was the chief marketing officer for CNN for many years, and we, every time a big news story happened, we sort of had two levels of response, the right thing to do in like disaster relief, and then what should CNN do here, which was the, sort of the brand citizenship part of it. And a lot of times, you know, our core business was making sure that those, the right stories got out and that people heard them. And even if they were detrimental to our own business because, you know, people were tired of the story or whatever, we still focused on those stories because that was important. That was the right thing to do. And so, you know, like the Parkland town hall, I thought was great for them on so many levels. Great for all of us because it was a wonderful, enlightening piece of programming. But it was, that was CNN's role in it. That was, and I applauded the fact that they put aside that time in prime time, spent the money to make something like that happen. They brought in people from all over the place for that, and just did it because the dialogue needed it. And so I like it when brands do it in right at the, like, with their core function, with their core promise, that they devote some of that to getting a problem solved or a, you know, an idea put forth.
Although I think news brands are a little bit of a different animal in that it's what you said, that commitment to news and to telling all sides of a story and to objectivity to the degree that that exists. That shouldn't be something that you as a news brand have to decide about. Like, that is really your core function. So for news brands, I feel like if it's being done correctly, those things are running parallel tracks anyway. I mean, and you know, but we see news right now, it's certainly not always the case, but really in the case of CNN, that's what it should be, or the Washington Post,
Should be, but that decision, they could have tried to just address that with a panel of like four people in a studio. They said, we will go to the expense of creating that gigantic venue and having all those people there and do something. And I'm sure that, you know, there was probably not an easy sell to sponsors because they didn't know what
Marco Rubio
was going to be.
Or Marco Rubio. I mean, that was the thing, that he showed up and the NRA lady showed up. It was like, wow. They really want it. They're doing it. And, you know, that scored points in my book that they even showed up.
Right. And I would imagine they lost a lot of money on that night because they didn't, you know, because they couldn't really get a lot of advertisers, I would imagine. But they went to an extraordinary step because otherwise, if they were just thinking with the balance sheet in mind, they would have just booked, you know, three people in a studio and had that conversation.
Which they do most nights of the year. Let's dovetail a little bit because it's sort of relevant. This isn't really a news thing, but it's interesting because I do think, you know, obviously NBC and CBS have had a lot of issues with sexual misconduct cases. Comes up in the middle of Me Too, probably as a result of Me Too, because people started to really dig in. And I think that, I mean, NBC and CBS, those big, big brands, I think they have a hard time, or they have had a hard time really narrowing into what their brand is, but it's something that they're having to do more. But how do you think companies like that can navigate these, you know, this environment, and especially when you're really in the line of fire?
Well, it is a more complicated issue when you're talking about big broadcast networks, because they have sports divisions and news divisions and entertainment divisions, and every one of those probably has a slightly different take on brand citizenship, and that doesn't get, you know, the company brand, the master brand, I guess, off the hook for doing brand citizenship. But I think the core thing that goes on in all of these businesses is that they are trying to find storytellers and they are trying to find new voices to tell those stories. So I think the best aspect of brand citizenship that they should focus on and think about is how are they finding the voices that appear on their platforms. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the most authentic through line in all of those businesses. You know, when it comes to other things that are more targeted, you know, that the sports division probably has one way of approaching it, the news the other. And I would probably encourage each one of those divisions to think about it, you know, within that division.
I think also it kind of goes back to something you guys were saying earlier, which is sort of being able to authentically apologize is the word that comes to mind. I don't love the whole scenario of apologizing, but I mean, a way to address it, I'm going to switch from the news networks and just go to United for a second. So everybody knows the story where the United guy was, or the guy was dragged off the United flight, and it was that big thing, and United really didn't handle it well. It was, you know, they didn't own it. It took the CEO days to respond. And I think for NBC and CBS, I don't really think they've done a great job either of addressing what's going on in a way that feels authentic, as opposed to a way that feels defensive. And I think that defensive response is sort of old school, and that those brands are going to have to come into the new world where people are saying, you've got to be more accountable than this.
I'm always surprised that companies don't have an approach to crisis management and communicating about, you know, bad things that they've done, especially these days with social media works the way it does. You always need to be ready and yeah, clear about how you are going to respond, and your response needs to be not only validating that you understand the gravity of the situation, but that you've also you're working very hard to figure out the right thing to do in response to it. I understand why at times they have been reticent about immediately responding and going, you know, we're firing that person or we're getting rid of that person or whatever, because, you know, a lot of these situations, there are some situations that emerge in the culture that it's very clear what the problem was. And then there are some where there's a backstory that might shed a different light on it. But at the very least, every single company needs to have a way of looking at this and a way of talking about it. And so when they're suddenly, yeah, I don't understand why anybody would be scrambling to figure out what to say. You know, that to me has been the biggest surprise out of all of this. I just think it's amazing.
How did you guys feel that Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg handled everything that happened with Cambridge Analytica?
That's a really complicated one, too, because I think that from an external perspective, they did all the right things, but I don't think they really quelled people's concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think they put out a spot that's really quite amazing.
Yes, I've seen that spot, yeah.
Quite a few weeks after the scandal broke, and said, you know, we really care about your privacy. The question is, they can say that, but, you know, there's a lot of concern about what that really means. And I think, you know, it's not just Facebook, it's all activity online now. People have to face the ugly truth that everything they've done has been captured by somebody or one person or another, one brand or another. And the other thing is, as somebody said, and I thought it was a great quote, I can't remember who said it, is that if somebody's not charging you for their service or their offering, it means you are the product.
Yeah,
and
right.
That, you know, that was the case with Facebook. So I think it, you know, again, I would give them broad cultural, you know, kudos for how they responded and how they took accountability. I think it came very late in the game. But, you know, as these things unfolded in the beginning, I think they didn't really know and they had to really investigate. So I think given the fact that they were caught a little off guard and then needed to investigate, and when it became clear that they had a role of some sort and magnitude that they didn't imagine, they, you know, I think everything he said and did was exactly on point. I guess the question is, you know, has that restored faith in Facebook? I guess remains to be seen.
And I would say, I think that they, by and large, did what they could do, you know, in this. I would have changed some of the communication strategy, because I feel like their initial response was, you know, dismissing it and minimizing
yeah.
it.
That, and the early response, yes.
Deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that I thought was very strange. And for something that powerful, they have to understand and acknowledge how powerful they are, because it with one, you know, speaking out of one side of their mouth saying we're the most powerful connection engine on earth, and then saying but nothing bad could happen with it, that's right. That's being alarmist and crazy. I was like, that's strange. That struck me as wrong. But when Mark Zuckerberg got in front of the legislators, I thought he handled it well, given the strangeness of the questions he was being asked.
Yeah.
How odd that was.
Because they didn't understand anything about Facebook.
No.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they didn't even know what stuff Facebook was. But
yeah.
but the part that I felt like really was not the way I would have handled it was them, you know, him implying that, well, all of those ways of protecting your privacy are already there. You just needed to read it. In other words, putting it back on the consumer that, well,
right.
you hadn't read the fine print.
You have the terms of service.
Like yeah.
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 Yeah. And I thought that was a little bit disingenuous, because they certainly haven't made that clear to me that the things I could have done. And yes, if I, you know, if there's a Facebook maven in your family, they might have clued you into that. I'm also a little surprised, not that they would have done this officially, but maybe that there wasn't a counter thing, that a lot of people kind of enjoy the benefits of the fact that Facebook shares their data. And, you know, as do most of the things you do online. So, you know, I think that this is a moment, I hope, in their next wave of understanding what this means for their customers, they will kind of think about how they talk about the benefits of data sharing, and talk about the benefits of how that
being
can be
connected.
An empowering thing for people and being connected. I think they just took it for granted, and that of course it's got being connected is better than not being connected. And I'm like, well, maybe if you're in a dorm room at Harvard, it is, but. You know, when you've got homes and kids and, you know,
countries
I think it was very interesting episode of The Daily, the New York Times Daily podcast, which I adore. And they would do this, I think it was just yesterday, a story about how Facebook, fake news on Facebook has led to, you know, lots of very violent behavior in, like Sri Lanka was the example that they gave, and they profiled a man who there was a false rumor about his business. His store was a mob came and you know destroyed his restaurant. Then went on, and it led to other similar acts around the country, and was all based on something fake. And so his whole livelihood and everything was destroyed by this thing that was spread just on Facebook. And the next day after it was all said and done. The reporter comes to see him, but he's on Facebook, and he's like, "Wow, I'm surprised that you're still on Facebook because you still use it as your primary source of news when this happened to you." He goes, "Well, of course I do. It's still the most important thing in my life." So, I thought it was an interesting thing, and I think that that's a tremendous responsibility that Facebook has to. You know, that is Facebook has to grapple with and own.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is two things that strike me about that situation is one, it sort of ultimately becomes an opportunity for Facebook to do a deep dive and figure out what they do stand for and how they mm-hmm. want to position themselves, because they obviously had not done that really. And then I also think that their problem is they're saying these things and they're putting out this spot, but it's like there's definitely hasn't been transparency around how this data is being used. And there still isn't, because people don't understand it well enough to know. So they post. I mean, I would say on my own Facebook, I definitely, you know, you can mess with your privacy settings or whatever, but I definitely don't spend time doing it. And I still don't spend a lot of time worrying about it, but probably you should. But you have to be pretty digitally savvy to be able to get in there and make sure that that's all where you want it. If you are, you know, my parents that, you know, they're, yeah. They're happy they can post, basically. I don't think they're going to spend
right.
time trying to figure out how their data is protected. And I mean, it's a big responsibility, but I think, you know, it was a hard way for Facebook to learn the lesson, but good that they, hopefully that they did, that, you know, this is, you can't just be casual about this.
Well, I think to the point of this whole podcast, you know, I think a really interesting question for Facebook is what does brand citizenship look like for them?
Right.
Because they thought it was about connecting the world, but now, you know, in their own admission, they didn't really anticipate that people would use it for nefarious reasons. And so when they can, and they do, and there's no policing of it, you know, how can they make society a better place and make it more open and connected at the same time?
Right.
That becomes sort of their next brand citizenship hurdle.
Okay.
Yep.
So we've run pretty long. Let's just wrap it up by, is there anything that you can think of that you think this is what people should, you know, one sentence, this is what people hopefully will take away from this panel?
What I would say is that because it's a session being held at Promax and the attendees will be people who are in the communications business and are really charged with finding, you know, the words, the images, the ways of conveying brand citizenship, that really understanding the language of it, that language of it that will be authentic to your brand but also meaningful to the audience, is really probably one of the most important new skill sets you can be developing right now. You know, in doing so, you will get a window into not only, you know, your brand's future but also business's future. That's what I think why it's important to be focused on it right now.
Yeah, and I would only add that I think that, you know, I think it's a worthy exercise to have with a conversation with leadership of, you know, other than profit, why are we in business? What are we here to do?
Yes.
How do we make the world a better place? How are we helping or connecting with our customers or consumers in ways that are meaningful to them and that move society forward? So I think that's a worthy conversation because I think we all get caught up in ratings and revenue and all those metrics that are important for businesses but not necessarily important for people.
Okay. Okay. So everyone can look forward to that takeaway. But I think, you know, you guys can see just by how quickly Linda and Scott get in depth on stuff. It's just always interesting to talk to you guys. So thank you both so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we look forward to hearing from you at the conference in just a couple weeks.
Thanks, Paige.
Thank you. We're looking forward to it, too.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. Kareem Taylor produced this episode. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate Lekhayer-Marion contributes to Daily Brief. Follow Promax BDA on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.